and welcome along to the latest edition of the Daggers and Lids podcast. I'm Charles Dagnall. Lydia Greenway is here up in Leicestershire. We were together yesterday, actually. We were going to record this yesterday as we were together doing some voiceover, weren't we, in sound rooms in London for the Vitality Blast radio ads. I think that's your first ever sort of blast at having a go at radio ads. How did you find it?
Well, all I can say is I am very pleased that you were there to set the tone and do them to start with, because we went into this and what was it? We met at 10 to 11 for an 11 yeah. o'clock start. We didn't have a script or anything. We didn't know what we were doing, which is fine. You know, it's good to freestyle sometimes. But yeah, it was good fun. And I think, yeah, I was very pleased that you were there first. You can tell that you've worked in radio a lot, Daggers.
Well, I thought you nailed it. We were given a script after when we turned up. We were given a script of things to say. But it's alarming how we both turned into voiceover guys. Voiceover guy and voiceover girl. Buy your tickets now.
Yeah, it was like we were selling sofas, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sail on.
Terms and conditions apply. Make sure you read the details and all of that sort of stuff. So we blasted through that, and we were going to record. We were going to find a spot in London, and we were going to record one together. But as it turned out, time escaped us, and we had to get back to our respective homes. You to Mabel the child, me to Blue the dog.
And so
we had to do. So we're doing it today anyway, as we normally do, and we have got an absolute ton to get through because a lot has happened over the last week or so. We've had England squad announcements for the ASOR. We've had the 100 draft. We've had the WPL final. There's a little bit of other cricket that's going on at the moment. So let's crack on. Let's get straight down to it. And by the way, we've been getting loads and loads of comments on our YouTube channel and stuff like that, which we love. We absolutely love it. And I keep mentioning that we will do a podcast around your comments and stuff. But the thing is that the comments come up, as you would expect, in reference to what we've just been talking that podcast. And then sometimes sort of time has moved on. So it's not that we don't read them. We read every single one of them, and we are really grateful for your contributions. And also, they give us another view of maybe having a look, stepping outside ourselves a little bit and giving us your view. So please keep them coming. We absolutely love reading them, especially the one where Lydia has a lampshade coming out of the top of her head. Luckily today, she's at a specific angle where it's now just coming out of the side of her head.
Well, one thing I did see in the comments, this was a while ago, was about me being in a women's refuge because I didn't have anything up because I just moved house. But whoever, I can't remember who wrote it, but I've now got a picture frame up. So they'd be pleased about that.
I don't know whether we can see it or not, but we can assure our good viewers and our listeners that Lydia does not live in a women's refuge, and she does not actually walk around with a lampshade on her head. Meanwhile, let's get down to it then. So keep your comments coming in. We absolutely love reading them, and we thank you for the time that you take to write in them. So keep them coming in. Right, let's kick off. Let's start from the international matters. And quite recently, this was, six days ago, the England A squad had been announced for a sort of post-Ashes rebuild. That's what the headline said in Crick Info. They're going to return and play three T20s, three one-day internationals, and a sort of test match, if you like. So pretty much a multi-format series. This, of course, after England were demolished 16 points to nil in the recent Ashes series. Headlines are Paige Schofield gets the nod. She's fit and ready to go again. I'm not going to go through all the names, but essentially they're taking 20 players on this tour. Alice Capps is going to join them. Holly Armitage is there. Mahika Gore, Danny Gibson, Kirsty Gordon, some new names. Jodie Grewcock is in there. We'll come to her a little bit later. Rhianna McDonald-Gay, Freya Kemp. I said I wasn't going to read through them all. I pretty much have that. But Izzy Wong is there as well, and Grace Scriven, Saren Smale. So there's a couple I've not mentioned as well. But this is an opportunity to go and play some cricket out in in Australia. Firstly, your thoughts, Lyd, on the names that have been selected. It just seems to me like 20 is a lot of players.
It is a lot. I think there was mention of, because they've obviously been out in Abu Dhabi for a bit of a preparation camp, and there's been a lot of talk about their pace bowling program. So I wonder if that is embedded into this tour as well. So whether some of those names mentioned might not get loads of match time, but they might get more time out in Australia, obviously trying to get used to the conditions. That's not officially been said, but that's just what I'm thinking. When you see such a big squad named, that is a lot of players. I know that they are playing obviously all formats, so there are a few changes with the T20s and obviously 50 overs and then the 4-day, which I know you're going to get into. But yeah, it's an awful lot of players. It's good to see the familiar names. I'm pleased that someone like Kirsty Gordon is still in and amongst it, because we're so blessed with the amount of left arm spinners that we've got that you often forget someone like Kirsty Gordon has played for England. It's only because obviously Lindsay Smith, Sophie Eccleston are up ahead of her that she doesn't get too much of a look in. Holly Armitage, the captain, hasn't been named, which is interesting as well.
What would you do?
So there's options. Alice Capsey and Danny Gibson are in the 50 over and 4-day squad. I would be tempted to say to Alice Capsey, you're going to be captain of those two longer format series, because I think I know she needs to focus on her game, but we're talking about in the current England squad, who is potential to be the next captain after Heather if Nat Sibber-Brunt doesn't do it, and we haven't got the answers. So what an opportunity this is to say to Alice Capsey, yes, you need to work on your own game and develop that, but we're going to give you this responsibility as well, and see how she responds. I think that could be a really good thing for her as a character. Outside of that, I think the obvious one would be Holly Armitage. Yeah. I think she would be the natural captain of all of those squads. But there's been a lot of talk about planning for the future when it comes to captaincy. And I think this is quite a good opportunity to say to Holly, do the T20s. Maybe say to Alice Capsey, you're going to do the 50 over series, and then maybe Holly can do the 4-day stuff. I don't know. Obviously, there's Grace Scrivens in there as well. But that would be my thinking, is don't waste that opportunity. What are you saying, Daggers?
I concur, actually. I think the best captain amongst that lot is Holly Armitage.
Yeah.
And I think she's got a huge amount of experience with it, with the Diamonds and with also the Northern Superchargers. And I think she's a very astute captain. I think players like playing under her. Now, this is not to say that if, you know, is Holly Armitage actually on the fringe of England's selection? Now she wants to play for England. And you know, you're giving a, I'm not saying a burden, that's not what I mean, but I think she is the most suitable captain across formats, potentially for the England A side. But I'm with you as well. I think having an opportunity to maybe give Capsey a go, to give Scrivens a go. I'm just sort of looking out there. You know, Kirsty Gordon captained the plays to T20 success in the Charlotte Edwards Cup last year. Is she a potential possibility for leading one of the sides? So I think they've got options, but I think they would be remiss not to maybe chop and change it. I'm not saying they have to. No, I don't think that. Remiss is the wrong word. I think it's a good opportunity to do so. But for argument's sake, I think if Holly Armitage was captain throughout all of the entirety of the tour, I don't think that's a bad thing either. So I think that this is but I would like to see someone young given an opportunity to take the reins, see how they perform. It might not even necessarily be, you know, there's no sort of World Cup qualification or anything like that surrounding. Also, if you let Alice Capsey captain one game and you let Danny Gibson captain another and Freya Kemp captain, I have no problems with that. I've absolutely no problems. Mm. See how they take to this, see how they learn, what their issues were or what they weren't. Just an information gathering. The thing I have with this tour is, you know, there's 17 players in the England T20 squad, the A squad. There's 20 players in the 50-over squad, and there's 16 in the four-day squad. I'm sorry, that's very expensive. It's a very expensive camp to take everybody, plus support staff and all of the other things that go with it, being an England A player. Are they necessarily going to learn that much with nine players not playing in the 50-over game and just doing laps and doing some nets and stuff that you can do back at Loughborough, or necessarily being in pre-season with their own counties? I don't know. I think that's a lot of players. I wouldn't have taken that many. I think it's a waste, personally, because you're not going to all get necessarily game time. One aspect is that Danny Gibson and Alice Capsey will not be available for the T20 I leg, which begins on March the 26th. That's in a week's time. Now, Danny Gibson and Alice Capsey were part of the WPL, it said. They were on duty at the WPL, and so they missed the T20 leg. Why?
It's a good question, Daggers. It's a good question. What, they've not played cricket, have they?
Finger on it?
Yeah. Well, they've, looking back at the WPL, how many games did they play? Was it one game?
Alice Capsey played one. She played the first game. That was on the 15th of February.
Yeah. Right? I'm with you, Daggers.
Danny Gibson played one game, which was the Eliminator, which is just recently. So what was that? The Eliminator. Hang on. I want to get the dates right here, Lid. The Eliminator was, I can't get it. Can't find it for the moment.
It wasn't that long ago, but it's
Wednesday. So it was like 5 days ago, something like that, right? So that's about 12 days or something between the Eliminator and the potential first game of the T20 International Series. But she's played one game, and that was because Deandra Dotton got injured. I don't get that. This is one of my massive frustrations. Alice Capsey's not played for a month. Yeah, she's netting. She's been training and all of that sort of stuff. This is the whole point. You want to know why I get frustrated with England and the culture and all of this sort of stuff? Because you're wrapping them in cotton wool for no reason. Why are they not playing? You want players to be playing. You know, and does this also mean that these 20 players that are going out for this tour, which ends in sort of mid-April, I think it is, where the tour ends. Hang on a sec. The four-day game is going to be, when does it finish?
Finishes on the 15th. It's between the 12th and the 15th of April. 15th of April.
Are these players going to get pulled out of domestic cricket? You know, because they've just been over to Australia training and stuff like that. If they do, I would go absolutely ape poo.
you can say it, Daggers.
I would get so frustrated if they get pulled out. I'm not saying they will, and they may not at all. But we've been around for a little while now, and this is the kind of thing that England do, is that they, you know, a bit like New Zealand last year for the full side, was that, you know, they played some games, like three or four games or whatever in New Zealand or whatever, and then no one played domestic cricket until the start of the international series. You know, what are you doing?
I hope
that that's not the case. But why Capsey and Danny Gibson are not involved in that T20, God only knows. Get them playing. More match time.
Yeah, I'm with you, Daggers. And I think your point on the domestic stuff will be interesting, because obviously they're having the review, or they've had the review. And so what comes from that, I would be really interested to see if there's any stipulation about domestic cricket and what involvement England players will have, because there is that big chunk, isn't there, at the start of the season. The Metro Bank fixtures are there, and then at the back end. So I just really hope that they make the most of that. But yeah, it will be interesting to see how that tour unfolds. It's all in Sydney, isn't it? Hurstville Oval, the T20 matches, Cricket Central, which is sort of the new headquarters, I think, for New South Wales. But again, unsociable times for us, Daggers. We're half midnight, isn't it, UK time? So either way, though, we will be following it, which will... We'll make sure we keep everyone up to date with it.
We certainly will. You mentioned the review, by the way. And I have got sort of, an official, unofficial line that basically the review has happened. Okay, so the review has happened. The results of which I'm sure will be, and this is from sources within the ECB, is that we will sort of find out the results of that review in due course. That's the latest we've got, and that's all we have. So I will be intrigued to see what that review brings. But it's just one of those deep frustrations of mine that I've mentioned many times on the podcast. You have done the same as well. I don't understand why that Danny Gibson and Alice Capsey are not playing the T20 or not available to play in the T20 part of this leg. This is absolute madness to me. And that's, for me, that's part of the culture that needs to change. I'm sorry. You cannot. Yeah. You've got to play as much cricket as you possibly can if you're within that sort of England. Well, if you're a professional cricketer, and especially as young players, and I don't get it. I just don't get it.
I'm with you, Daggers. I'm with you. Anyway. I think as a batter as well.
Right, let's move on.
Let's.
The 100 draft.
Yes.
Was what happened around about, my God, I'm losing track of days here, Led, since I've been back from India. It was about a week ago, wasn't it? We're going to focus on the women's, although a quick word, I was hugely excited by the men's as well, actually. I thought there were some really great names that were selected. I think the competition as a whole is going to be raising quality. And so I was sort of like, came out of the men's draft thinking, whoa, that's pretty good. I don't care if David Warner, you think he's past it. He's David Warner. He's that villain that you love to hate. And I think that makes it interesting. But anyway, be that as it may, there was only 29 picks to be made in the 100 draft, four of which were going to be overseas players. There was four available in the first round. That was the Birmingham Phoenix, who had the first selection, and one for the Oval Invincibles, Welsh Fire and London Spirit. Now, also this year, you were able to have direct signings. There were four direct signings made. The Southern Brave directly signed Lauren Wolfhart, who was at the Northern Superchargers, if memory serves. Has been signed by the Birmingham Phoenix, the Aussie in-swing bowler. Meg Lanning she's moved to the Oval Invincibles, and Amelia Kerr was directly signed by the Manchester Originals. And so, there were, in the first six picks, Birmingham Phoenix had two of them, the Oval Invincibles, Welsh Fire and London Spirit had one, and Manchester Originals had one. It was a bit. I was there. I was part of the draft.
Yes, you were. You love a draft, though, Daggers.
Yes, I do. I do like a draft, and this comes from my NFL roots. Yes. So I get really excited about that.
I know.
And I felt after the first round of selections, I felt a little bit flat after it, because basically what happened was, the Birmingham Phoenix wanted to try and get one of the England players that were available. They were Sophia Dunkley, Paige Schofield, and Heather Knight, all of whom had right-to-match options from the Invincibles, Welsh Fire and London Spirit. So the Birmingham Phoenix selected all three. They were right-to-matched. They ended up at the original teams that they were there last season. And then they selected Georgia Vol as their first pick of the draft. We'll come to Georgia Vol in a moment. But to me, that sort of is a bit anticlimactic, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, well, I was looking at the couple of picks that the Phoenix went with, Georgia Vol and Emma Lamb, and I do worry about the makeup of a team. I do think if you are going to fill your top brackets, you've got to go all-rounders in the women's game. Like, you have to. You only have to look at the WPL. Mumbai Indians won it because they have the best all-rounders. They have Meelie Kerr, Hayley Matthews, Nat Sivabrunt. So this is no offence to Georgia Vol. I know she bowled a little bit out in the WPL, but she doesn't bowl. She's not an out-and-out bowler for Australia. But she is a huge talent and she's so exciting, so I'm sure she will be fantastic to watch. But again, with Emma Lamb as well, they've gone all out batting, haven't they? So I just feel I don't know if they've maximised their picks, but they would have looked at their skeleton of the side and they would have said, right, we need an opening batter or we need a number three or whatever. We need someone to go in and make the most of the power play. So there would be thinking behind that. But that was my initial thought process when I saw those couple of picks. What were you thinking about that,
Dagger? Yeah, I mean, I wrote on my list what each team or what I thought each team needed, kind of thing. In the Birmingham Phoenix, I had power hitter, opening bat and off spinner. So might I have selected a genuine sort of off-spinning all-rounder in Maddie Villiers in that pick for where Emma Lamb was? Yeah, I might have been tempted to. Georgia Vol, I've got no problems with whatsoever. She's an outstanding cricketer. Her stock is at its highest it's been, especially after that 99 not out that she hit for the UP Warriors in the WPL. She is a precocious talent. And I think that when you line up, they've got Megan Shute, they've got Elise Perry, they've got M. Arlott, you know, so they've got a bit of a sort of, they're fine on the scene bowling front. And then Hannah Baker, Karis Paveley, and, you know, they were the spinners. Would I have gone for a more experienced spinner? I might have done. Emma Lamb can provide that for you. So this is all, you know, conjecture and opinion kind of thing, you know. I wasn't, but as for the Oval Invincibles, Welsh Fire and London Spirit with Paige Schofield, Sophia Dunkley, Heather Knight, they were the gaps that were missing on my team sheets. So I would like to get rid of the right to match thing. I think if you're in a draft, you get selected by the side that you get selected by, and you have to deal with that and live with that. It's a bit safe. And it's not interesting. It needs to be more interesting. There needs to be a narrative. Ooh, Sophia Dunkley's moved to the London Spirit. What does that mean? Kind of thing.
Yes.
That's why the Americans do it so well when they draft, kind of thing. It's that narrative.
I guess in a way, it's like a direct signing, isn't it? The right to match. Because they obviously have the direct signings before. Then they come in and they've got the safety net of the right to match. So I suppose what you're saying is there should be more jeopardy by taking away that right to match. You say to Sophia Dunkley, okay, we hope we're going to get you, but we're not 100% sure, or Heather Knight or whatever. Because clearly teams say to them, Paige, we're not going to sign you as a direct sign-in, but you're going to go into the draft and we will use our right to match. That is like a direct sign-in, isn't it, really? It is. I get that point. Yeah, that's fair enough.
I'm in that. I don't get that. Anyway, be that as it may, this all may be a moot point. Given the investment that's come into the 100 competition from outside outside businesses and investors and stuff, we might not. I know that I have no doubts that those who are from India might prefer an auction system as opposed to a draft system.
Yes.
All of that, we don't know. We genuinely don't know. But of the draft for this year, is there anything that sort of stuck out to you, some of the signings that were made or actually not made?
Yeah.
Some of the things not selected.
Interesting not to see a huge amount of Indian players. But like you say, that's because there were only four overseas slots. But there obviously was the direct signing process. So there's no Smriti Mandhana, there's no Harmanpreet Kaur, no Rodrigues. There is Dipti Sharma, so she's at the London Spirit again. And one thing that I looked at was the continuity in some of the teams and the teams who look strongest. So for me, Northern Superchargers, pretty much unchanged. They look strong again. London Spirit, again, pretty similar. They've obviously got Izzy Wong this year. Heather Knight remains there as well. And Oval Invincibles, I think they are stronger with Meg Lanning there, because obviously Susie Bates was there from the start, actually. And she was brilliant for them. But I just feel Meg Lanning now, she will add that added leadership quality to the side, and obviously with the bat as well. And her and obviously Marizan Kapp will be scarred from that WPL final. I felt for them. That's their third one, isn't it? So, those three teams for me, they look the most unsettled and the ones who have performed pretty well in recent times. What about you? Any players that you think should have been there?
I agree about the continuity of the size. I thought the Welsh Fire had a really good draft. Now, yeah. They only had three spaces to fill, one of which was filled by Sophia Dunkley. And then they've got talent throughout. Matthews, Hayley Matthews, Tammy Beaumont, Jess Jonathan, Shabnam Ishmael, Sarah Bryce, yeah. who's had a great WPL.
Yeah.
Georgia Elwes, great experience all around her. Freya Davis, the national opening bowler. Georgia Davis, who had a good season with the Oscar. Yeah. So I think a real good side.
Katie there. Levick. As well,
did Katie George and Katie Levick, and I think Katie George looked like a different cricketer to me last year when I watched her. She's over her injury problems. She's bowling with good pace, lots of different variations. She can bat. She's brilliant in the field. And then Katie Levick, who was at the 12,500, but you know her experience as a leg spinner and the amount of wickets that she's picked up over the course of her career, I think they may be. They were close last year, obviously getting to the final, yeah. but maybe that's the selections that might tip them over the line this year. But I'm with you. The Northern Superchargers look very strong, as do the Invincibles. The Fire, I thought, looks stronger now, and the London Spirit, who have added Izzy Wong and Rebecca Tyson. I don't know a great deal about Rebecca Tyson, I have to admit, and look forward to watching her. Just quickly, Manchester Originals picked up Deandra Dottin as their other overseas player, and Saren Smale as well, to sort of boost their batting order. So that's what they did. Jodie Grewcock was a high pick for the Trent Rockets leggy. From Sunrisers, I haven't seen a great deal of her. She's in the England A squad, so I'm looking forward to seeing what she presents over this 100 period.
What's making me smile, Daggers, is I haven't really paid attention to the salary bands. I'm on it. I've got to be honest with you. But Saren Smale, she's going to get 36 grand in her bank account.
Those bloody Grewcock.
It's amazing. I absolutely love it. Just I forget how far the game's come. And I was just looking at you. You kindly sent me over some of your notes because I wasn't obviously at the draft. But I was just having a quick look at it there. And I thought, God, go on, girls. They're doing well, aren't they? But yeah, I'm with you so much.
Schofield's on the top bracket, 65 grand.
I know.
And she was down at the draft as well. I'm thinking of asking her for a loan here, aren't I? Yeah. That's how it should be. Is it where it needs to be? Is it where it should be? No, I don't think so. I think those lower levels need to be brought up a lot more.
Yeah.
It's the same in the men's. And it kind of worked where the top level was £200,000, whereas the bottom level, that was a big change from where the top bracket was last year.
Yeah.
Whereas the bottom brackets are, as they were sort of previous years. I would like to see a more discernible change. I think that's going to happen with the 100 changing hands. But I'd like to see those bottom levels risen up to sort of, I'd like the bottom level to be about 20 grand. I think that's about fair. And sort of just squeeze things up a little bit. Because look, let's make no mistake, that they're not going to get paid at the moment at the same level that the men's brackets are paid. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I'm not going to get into. What I'm saying is, as it stands at the moment, I would like to see those bottom brackets of the women's section actually raised up to a lot more.
I'm with you, because we've still got the wildcard picks, haven't we, to come in. So there'd be the bottom two bands, which again will be that £10,000 mark. So that'll be interesting actually to see how teams go about those selections.
I hope we get to see some of the 19s players that went out to Malaysia get selected. I think they probably will. So we've got two rounds of wildcard picks, and that will happen, I think, around about May time, I think.
I'm not sure how it's working this year, if it's a direct sign. Well, it would be, wouldn't it? Off the back of perhaps some early form shown in the domestic stuff, if it's underway by then, probably need to have a look into that and confirm how that will actually work. But it's exciting, Daggers. Can't wait to get it going. August.
I think there's some really, really strong sides, I think, in the women's competition. Just to finish off, Southern Brave selected Sophie Devine and Chloe Tryon, Maddie Villiers, Josie Groves and Phoebe Graham. All good selections to add to Wolf Art, Danny Wyatt, Maya Bouchier, Lauren Bell, Freya Kemp, Georgia Adams, TCC and Rihanna Southby. I was a little surprised that Chanel Henry didn't get looked at.
I think it's
something different. And her sharing the new ball with Lauren Bell, I think, would have been exciting. She's devastating down the lower order. So Sophie Devine, of course, you know her body of work. Chloe Tryon at the 20 grand stage, you could have got Chanel Henry there. Maybe they wanted the left arm spin option. And look, wonderful player, amazing striker of the ball. I just thought they were both a bit safe for me. If I'm being honest, I might have been tempted to get a left-hander in Chamari Atapattu potentially, and she gives you an off-spin option. But this is the beauty of it. Who am I? I said this on the day. Who am I to question the selections of Charlotte Edwards? And I have absolutely no doubt that her selection will be proven correct. And mine won't. But it was just the way I kind of saw it on the day.
Yeah, well, but as we said at the start, the draft is your thing. Like, I know how much you love the NFL and all the draft and the mechanics of it. So it's understandable that you would have your strong opinions on it.
If it was up to me, we'd be trading players, we'd be having sort of fights over players and stuff like that, and really get some energy into it a little bit more. But I do love the draft. I'm always grateful. Yeah. To be asked to come down and do it alongside Kenzie Minnalli, who's just a complete darling as well. Mm. She's the kind of glue where I am sort of, I've got names coming to me at such a rate, and I'm putting them all down on my pieces of paper and on my iPad and stuff, and trying to formulate opinions and thoughts of what I see in a very short space of time. So it's hardcore for me, and Kenzie thankfully manages to sort of A, keep me calm, because I do get excited. I like seeing teams come together, what we got to look forward to in the summer. So anyway, that is the 100 draft. We look forward to the 100 in August and seeing all of those sides going head to head. But I think it will be a really competitive competition. Mm.
Right, Daggers. Well, let's move on. Still lots to talk about. The WPL final happened at the weekend, so we need to dissect that and share our thoughts on how that game went down. I will just give a summary of how it panned out in the end. Obviously, it was Mumbai Indians and the Delhi Capitals. It was a rerun of the final in the first year. Obviously, it was the third final for Delhi Capitals. They'd made the final every year, but they haven't been able to win it. And this final, unfortunately, was the same for them this year as well. Mumbai Indians, they batted first. And I have to say, when they lost two quick wickets, Yastika Bhatia and Hayley Matthews, both the openers, I thought, OK, there needs to be a bit of rebuilding here. Luckily, Natsiva Brunt and Harmanpreet Kaur came together. Harmanpreet Kaur batted unbelievably well. She managed to get 66 off 44. She was well supported by Nat, who got 30 off 28. But that partnership just boosted them. And I think the total that they got up to in the end wouldn't have felt enough, 149 for seven. But you just felt, because of that scoreboard pressure and because of it being a final, Delhi Capitals just struggled slightly. In reply, Meg Lanning and Shefali Verma were unable to make an impact, really. They've been the most successful opening partnership in the WPL history. And that would have been their, I suppose, their danger point for Mumbai Indians. Luckily, they were removed. Shabnam Ishmael got Shefali Verma LBW. Meg Lanning was bowled by Natsiva Brunt. And then you just felt, I don't know what you felt in that run chase, Daggers, of Delhi Capitals, but there were two key players in that run chase after the openers went. It was Jemoma Rodrigues and then it was Marizan Kapp. And unfortunately, neither of those were able to go on and see it home. So the Delhi Capitals in the end fell short. They were 141 for nine. But again, it was an unbelievable final. So close. You were there at the start. There were loads of close matches. And I do wonder if this is pushing the WBBL in terms of the best franchise competition in the world. My sense is that it is, because the Indian domestic talent now is really coming to the fore. Those names that people aren't aware of, suddenly they step onto this stage and they start making an impact. That's my sense. I don't know what your thoughts are on it, Daggers.
Well, firstly, on the final, it was very interesting that the games throughout Vadodara, Bengaluru and Lucknow, the trend was chasing. You know, if you won the toss, you would chase, and more likely you were going to have a really good chance of winning, and there was lots of factors in that. I think the dew played a part in Vadodara and a little bit in Bengaluru and definitely in Lucknow as well. But I also think it got into sides' minds as well. Oh, God, we're batting first and, you know, we've lost the game kind of thing, which wasn't necessarily. There were opportunities throughout those three venues for sides to actually win games if they were batting first. The trend completely turned around in Mumbai, where no chasing side won. You got the runs on the board and no one managed to knock them off. So that was something that was interesting to me. The final was played on the wicket that was just holding a little bit for spinners and for the seamers as well. It wasn't as easy to score. I'm with you, although Harmanpreet Kaur made it look.
Yes.
Harmanpreet Kaur made it look as though it was, you know, it was the flattest pitch in the history of the world, because she was immense in that. And that just shows you the quality of Harmanpreet. We don't necessarily see it a great deal in the fact that she doesn't get a great deal of opportunity a lot of the time because of the top order of the Mumbai Indians. And you know that better than anyone, you know, having worked with them over the first 2 years. There was some things that really came out. Once, I agree, once Lanning and Verma go, Delhi Capitals don't necessarily have to lean on their middle order that much. And because it wasn't easy to score, and because you're facing the bowling attack that you were from the Mumbai Indians, then it was always going to be a challenge. Marizan Kapp got them close. And, you know, goodness me, another couple of yards on a shot that she got caught out on, and we could have been talking about a different final. But you can see what it meant. She was in floods of tears after the final, because she got what she bowled beautifully, batted beautifully, got a couple of wickets, and got 40 odd, and you know, she did all she could, as did anyone. But look, it was a great final. You know, Mumbai Indians winning it again, Delhi losing for the third time in succession. There was a couple of things I wondered about. Delhi didn't play a game in Mumbai. Their last game was up in Lucknow. And so they've travelled all the way. It was on, when was the last game? It was the 7th of March, and the final was a week later kind of thing. So is that necessarily a good thing? Meanwhile, the Mumbai Indians have played three games, as well as they played two league games and the eliminator at that stadium and conditions and stuff like that. I don't think that's necessarily great. I understand why, because they wanted it to take it to different venues and they want the home side to play in those venues. So I get that. But I don't think necessarily, I think if there was a small advantage to be had, the Mumbai Indians probably had it. I thought Shabnam Ishmael, Shefali Verma for me has got to, if she is to be successful at the international level, she's got to learn how to play the short ball. Because sides are going to work her out, or they, if they've not already worked her out. She's a bit of a flat track bully. And, you know, every time I've seen them bowlers bowl back of a length and short to her, she's clueless. She doesn't need, you know, unless it's on the front foot, she can't score. And Shabnam Ishmael pushed her back, full length LBW. And, if you're going to play and make a difference at the international level T20 for India, then you've got to learn how to play, because that's what bowlers are going to do to you. Meg is a little bit susceptible to the one coming back in. We saw it in the 100 last year. I've seen it numerous times in the WPL. So that's just something, but she's Meg Lanning. You know, she'll work it out. But as regards the Indian talent, the one thing that does frustrate me a little bit, and I don't know how you get over this, is that the Mumbai Indians, and I know your association with them, 16 of the 20 overs are bowled by overseas players. And three of your top five are overseas players, and they do the majority of the work. Is that necessarily great for bringing on young Indian talent? I don't necessarily think so. It's brilliant that those world-class overseas players are there and you're playing against them, and that is good. But I think other sides do it slightly better. So I think there is a lot of young Indian talent, I agree with you, that has come to the fore. Kashvi Gautam, Kranti Goud, especially in the bowling departments. But I think they're used more, you know, for the Gujarat Giants. I think Delhi have got a 50-50 split. I think I did the maths on it. Yes. And, you know, I think that's a very healthy kind of split of work done by overseas and work done by local players. Do we then talk about maybe adding a team? Do we talk about maybe removing one of the overseas players? I don't know. But that was kind of my overview of the WPL. Is it bigger than the WBBL and the 100? Yes, I think it is bigger than those. Is the quality of the domestic players as good than the WBBL and the 100? I'm not sure yet. But when we get there, I'm absolutely convinced it will, and maybe even overtake it. But it's still very young. It's still a very young competition.
Yeah, and I think that's a really fair point. I think the reason why I feel it's been better than the other competitions is because of the closeness of the games. I don't think we've always seen close games in the 100 or the WBBL, but it just felt like, and sometimes your feeling doesn't match up with the actual facts, does it? But it just felt like watching all the games, I was hooked because it just felt, maybe it was the crowds, maybe it was, I don't know, but there did seem to be a lot of close games. And I think your point on Mumbai, and obviously with the all-rounders doing the bulk of the work and the overs, I think that's why that's what has brought them the success. Because when you look at them in terms of their stats, when you look at the leading run scorers, so in top spot was Nat Sivabrant, over 500 runs, which is ridiculous. Elise Perry was second with 372, Hayley Matthews 307, Shefali Verma, and then Harmanpreet Kaur. So they've got three in the top five there in terms of runs scored. But then when you look at the wickets, Nat Sivabrant and Hayley Matthews are also the top wicket takers as well. So I take your point on
Amelie Kerr.
Amelie Kerr was number one. Yeah. So yeah, I take your point on, obviously there's not a much domestic talent, but my opinion is, I think you've got to play your best bowlers and try and bring your domestic talent on in other ways outside of the sort of playing 11.
It's a delicate balance, and how much, you know, they want the best product because it's India. They want the best, and I totally get that, and I love that about it. They want the best product they can possibly can. They want as many eyes on them as they possibly can.
Yeah,
and that they have absolutely done, because you go to these stadiums, the ones in, I mean, Vadodara, first time we've been there, 20,000 people in this fantastic stadium. Bengaluru is absolutely nuts. Lucknow was, you know, they've been there. It didn't get necessarily the reaction, but I think it's quite a passive kind of cricket watching area anyway. And then Mumbai, I thought crowds could have been a little bit better in Mumbai. Anyway, be that as it may, they're building this product and they're building it brilliantly. I can't believe it. You know, the television coverage, that English guy that they bring over on commentary, my God, he's good.
Good voice for radio voiceovers.
Oh my God. I mean, that's what people watch for.
Daggers, I messaged you, Daggers, when you were, what were you promoting during one of those games? You had to promote the cars, didn't you?
Yes, the Tata Curve.
So I did text you and I said that you've missed a trick not pursuing a career in car sales.
I think I can see myself making a lot of cash being voiceover for a huge number of products out in India. But I think it is a delicate balance where I think the BCCI might want to get involved, whether they will or not, I don't know. They just want the best. If you're the Ambanis, you want to win. You don't care how, you just want to win. Is that good for Indian cricket? Don't know. So it's a, I think it's a balance they've got to try and strike, because if you look at, you know, Australia and their depth of domestic cricket, especially playing in the WBBL, it is high. The domestic players are very, very good. And the talent coming through, and they get that opportunity. So I think a balance has to be kind of struck.
Oh yeah, so I reckon that as well. Though you touched on it last week with Anjum Chopra. I think that's where the importance of your domestic structure underneath has to be good, because that's where your young talent should be developed. I suppose the WPL is like the best of the best, and then underneath that, that's where maybe India could perhaps look at having a more structured domestic program. But I don't know, I'm speaking out of turn a little bit, because I don't know all the ins and outs of the domestic structure in India. But that would be my suggestion, is get that young talent developing underneath the WPL, so they're then ready to come in and perform, rather than being given the opportunities for development at WPL level.
But overall, great tournament, great tournament. Fabulous to see world class. Natsa Vibrun, I've never seen a player dominate in the way that she dominated in that tournament. Against, this is why I maintain that she's the best batter in the world. And the reason I say this is, and I said this to Mel Jones, and she's sort of like, well, what's your qualification of that? I said, well, basically, the Australian batters don't have to bat against Australia internationally. She does. And still dominates in those things. So I mean, it's a silly argument, because I think who's the best is, I hate those arguments kind of thing. Because I like enjoying lots of players playing superbly well, and I think there are some wonderful talents out there. But you look at that domination of her, and that is, you know, over 130 runs more than the next best.
Yeah,
I've never seen a player dominate in any franchise competition the way that she dominated in this WPL.
Right, Daggers, let's keep moving on. So the other bit of news that we've had, World Cup qualifiers, they've finally been announced. I think that all the teams who it was applicable for have been waiting for a text message or an email or something to say when it's going to be. But we have got the news that it's going to be start on April the 9th, and it's going to be hosted in Pakistan. All of the games are going to be in Lahore. It's going to be between six nations. So there's two places up for grabs. And obviously this is for the ICC Women's Cricket World Cup, which will be taking place later in the year in India. Teams already there, obviously India themselves, Australia, England, New Zealand, South Africa and Sri Lanka. So the teams vying for a spot will be Bangladesh, Ireland, Pakistan, the West Indies, and also Scotland and Thailand. So two places up for grabs. It's going to be between April the 9th and the 19th. So a pretty condensed tournament. But what say you, Daggers, in terms of the favourites? Obviously, the West Indies, you would imagine, in terms of being one of those big name nations. But then you look at Bangladesh, then you look at Ireland and Pakistan, and actually it could be quite tough for someone like West Indies to get out and into that top two spot. What do you think?
I agree. I think they're the favourites to go through. I think we will see them, because there's two spots, they will end up first or second. And I, you know, Bangladesh went over to the West Indies recently, and the West Indies put them aside quite comfortably, I think it was. Did they win one? Did Bangladesh win one? Memory's a bit foggy on that one. However, I will be hugely surprised if the West Indies are not one of those two sides, given the Henrys and the Dottins and the Hayley Matthews's of this world. The other one is a little bit open. Ireland went to Bangladesh, they got hammered in the 50-over competition. In those conditions. However, they won the T20s 3-0. If it was a 20-over competition, I'd be a little bit more sort of hopeful of their chances. Can they pull off a surprise and overcome sort of Pakistan and Bangladesh? Yes, I think they can. But will they? Oh, it's a tough one to call. I'm gonna pass this back to you. My gut says the league table was what it was for a reason, and you know, the West Indies and Bangladesh are probably the ones that may go through, but I don't know. I can't call it.
Yeah, I'm with you, Daggers, because then you throw Pakistan into the mix, obviously playing at home, under a new captain as well, Fatema Sana, who I was so impressed with in the recent T20 World Cup. But she obviously, she lost her father, I think, midway through that tournament. She had to go home and come back again, which that in itself was admirable. But I think she's a fantastic captain. I think they have lots of talent. And I just wonder if being at home, that they might have a bit of an advantage in terms of the conditions. Yeah. Because the Ireland, Scotland and Thailand, that will be their challenge, is going over to those conditions, coming up against quality spinners and seeing how they can manufacture a total. Because as you were alluding to, 50 over cricket, it just separates the teams that bit more, doesn't it? And T20 yeah. cricket, I think it brings them closer together. So, yeah, I'm going to go West Indies and then I'm going to go Pakistan because of that home advantage. And I've just been so impressed with Fatima Sana and how she's led the team in recent times. But that's more of a... and I don't say that with as much conviction as I do the West Indies, but it will be interesting to see how that unfolds. And we'll make sure that we keep you all updated with that as well. And then finally, Daggers, just to finish with, we've been keeping everyone up to date with the New Zealand and Sri Lanka series. Unfortunate thing, the main storyline for this has been the rain, because the ODI series, which was a three-match series, two of them, unfortunately, were washed out. New Zealand won the other one, so they won that series 1-0. The T20s, that was a shame because it was 1-1 going into the last match. And that was rained off as well. So in game one of that, New Zealand were all out actually for 101 and Sri Lanka chased that down. So going into that second game, New Zealand were obviously behind the eight ball there. Then it was the opposite way round. So Sri Lanka batted first in that second game and posted 113 for seven. And then New Zealand chased that down relatively comfortably. They had they did that with nine balls to spare. So that series felt a little bit anticlimactic just because of the rain and how much of an impact that had, which was a real shame because going into that third game, you would have thought that would have been a decent one given that the scoreline was as it was. But never mind, not to be. But apart from that, that's the only other international cricket going on, unless you know something else,
Daggers. Just coming up as well, New Zealand have a three-match T20 international series against Australia coming up. They're on Friday the 21st, Sunday 23rd and Wednesday 26th of March. Sophie Devine, Amelia Kerr and Leah Tahuhu also return to that New Zealand squad for the Aussie Games. Alyssa Healy has been ruled out of the tour. Nicole Fulton has been handed her first call up for that as well. That's basically it. That is essentially the news and where we're up to. So I reckon it's going to be relatively quiet. We'll keep across the New Zealand-Australia games. We'll keep across the England A, Australia A games as well. And we will get together in due course. But as I mentioned before, me and Lids, and I speak for you here, Lids. By the way, if you can hear some crunching in the background, that Blue the dog has decided to entertain himself whilst I'm on here and crunch the loudest thing in the world. I don't know what he's doing. He's destroying all sorts. Come here. So I'm giving him a stroke right now so he stops crunching whatever he's doing. Here, do you want to say hello to everybody on YouTube?
Come on, let's have a look at him.
There he is.
Hello, he's Blue. Growing.
There we go. And so now he's just picking me and now biting me. Oh, that's good. Oh, there we go.
Daggers, he's got big.
He has got big, hasn't he? I've almost pulled a bicep, if I had a bicep, by picking him up there. But no, we all keep across it. Great to see you, Lid, as ever. Keep your comments coming in. We will read them all. And we look forward to another edition of the podcast coming your way soon.